Radio Prague News.
The Prime Minister has reversed an earlier decision for the government to resign. The Deputy Education Minister has been remanded in custody, and Czech leaders have marked the 72nd anniversary of the Prague uprising. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka on Friday reversed his decision to resign following a meeting a day earlier with the head of state and said he would now seek only the sacking of ANO leader and finance minister Andrej Babiš. The Prime Minister's original aim was for the entire cabinet to step down, this as a means of removing Mr. Babiš from his post over continuing corruption allegations and unexplained financial dealings. However, Mr. Sobotka said he had changed his mind after the president indicated he would treat the resignation as the Prime Minister's alone. That move would have left Mr. Babiš in place. And the Finance Minister, Andrej Babiš, at the center of that government crisis, has said that leaked recordings in which he can be heard speaking to a journalist from the Daily Mladá Fronta Dnes about sensitive information regarding fellow politician was material that had been manipulated. He also called it a provocation on the part of the journalist. Speaking to journalists in Plzeň on Friday, Mr. Babiš said he felt he had been the subject of surveillance for years, blaming the Interior Minister Milan Chovanec and charging there was a coordinated campaign to quote-unquote destroy him. The recordings appeared online this week, and the ANO leader has filed a criminal complaint over the matter. A district court for Prague 1 on Friday ruled that Deputy Education Minister Simona Kratochvílová, charged for allegedly manipulating subsidies programs for personal gain, will remain in custody. The court has yet to decide whether the same will apply to the head of the Czech Football Association, also charged Miroslav Pelta. The website Seznam.cz, citing police records, suggested Ms. Kratochvílová and Mr. Pelta had decided on subsidies to benefit themselves or associates. The police raided offices of the Czech Football Association earlier this week. Czech leaders marked the 72nd anniversary of the Prague uprising at the Czech Radio building on Friday, which was a focal point for the uprising in which Czechs took up arms against the Nazi oppressors. The radio itself was a beacon for resistance when the call came out for citizens to come and help defend the site. Among those attending Friday's memorial were the heads of the Czech Houses of Parliament, and the Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka, and also Prague Mayor Adriana Krnáčová. On Friday, Culture Minister Daniel Herman said that the Terezín Memorial should remind visitors not only of the horrors of the Holocaust, but serve as a warning for future generations. The minister made the statement while attending a ceremony marking 70 years since the memorial's completion. That was 2 years after the end of World War II. The minister reminded attendees that some survivors who had been held in the Terezín ghetto or in the Gestapo prison at the small fortress were still living, and that it was a duty of society to cultivate the memory of what had happened at the site. The minister said that his own grandmother had been one of those imprisoned at the Gestapo prison at the small fortress during World War II. The Nazis used Terezín as a ghetto and camp for the internment of Jews who were later sent on to death camps such as Auschwitz. Expat voters who plan to cast their ballot from abroad in the upcoming parliamentary election in the autumn will vote among candidates in the region of Central Bohemia. The region 1 of 14 in the Czech Republic was drawn on Friday. The same region was on the ballot for expatriates last time around when the last government was elected in 2013. Czechs abroad looking to vote will have until September the 10th to register. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's all the news for now. This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, the government crisis takes yet another unexpected twist. More in a moment. Czech politicians mark the 72nd anniversary of the Prague uprising. Czechs are outlining their priorities ahead of the Council of Europe. And a little later in the program, stay tuned to hear more about the Gerhard Richter exhibition now on in the Czech capital. That's all ahead. The Czech government crisis took an unexpected twist on Friday when the embattled Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka announced he would not hand in his resignation to President Zeman as expected, but would propose the dismissal of Finance Minister Andrej Babiš instead. The Prime Minister said his decision to resign and bring down the government over Mr. Babiš's suspect finances had been thwarted by the head of state and no longer made any sense. Daniela Lazarová reports.
Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka, widely considered one of the most predictable politicians on the Czech scene, dropped his second bombshell in a matter of days on Friday after clashing publicly with President Miloš Zeman over the government crisis on Thursday. The Prime Minister unexpectedly changed tack, announcing he would not go through with his decision to resign from office.
Mým cílem té demise bylo.
The reason for my resignation was to enforce the principles of political ethics in this country. I plan to resign in order to bring down the government, and with it Finance Minister Andrej Babiš. However, in view of the latest developments and the fact that the head of state would only accept my own resignation, such a step no longer makes any sense. I have decided instead to propose the dismissal of Finance Minister Andrej Babiš and hope that in this case at least the President will act in line with the Czech Constitution and recall him from office without further delay.
The Prime Minister said that the continued presence of ANO leader Andrej Babiš in the government was unthinkable. He cited not only the suspicion that the finance minister had likely engaged in financial machinations to avoid paying taxes, but the release of two recordings of the finance minister's phone calls in which Mr. Babiš is heard speaking to a journalist from a newspaper in his trust fund about sensitive information dug up on a number of politicians and advising him to hold the information for the time being, since it would be put to better effect ahead of the October general elections.
Každá z těchto dvou kaus, jak ta kauza neplacení daní.
Either of those cases, be it suspicion of tax evasion or the attempt to influence newspaper coverage to damage political rivals, would be enough for a politician to hand in his resignation. Any other member of cabinet would have done so already. Unfortunately, Andrej Babiš is incapable of self-reflection, incapable of making a decision in favor of the government and the country.
Finance Minister Andrej Babiš responded by saying he would leave his fate in the hands of the president and accused the Social Democrats of orchestrating a smear campaign against him. Meanwhile, the head of the opposition Civic Democrats, Petr Fiala, reiterated his call for early elections, describing the present state of Czech politics as a theatre of the absurd.
Daniela Lazarova reporting there on the state of Czech politics this week. Now we turn to this story. Czech Radio's Prague headquarters was very much the focal point for the Prague uprising against Nazi rule at the end of World War II. And this Friday, top state personalities assembled outside the radio building to pay homage to the hundreds who fell at the barricades in Prague and in scattered skirmishes across the country. Chris Johnston has more.
It's now 72 years since the Prague uprising on May 5, 1945, which marked the Czech bid to overthrow the long occupation of most of the country since March 1939, when the so-called Nazi protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia began. Plans for the rising against still powerful Nazi forces in the country had been made for months, with little signs the Germans would lay down their arms or retreat to US Army lines around 100 kilometres away, although the war was clearly lost. Czech radio, which had been used for Nazi and collaborationist propaganda over the previous years, finally became the beacon for resistance when the call went out in a broadcast for the rising to start and for citizens to come and help defend the radio building against German attempts to retake it. Barricades went up around Prague on May the 5th, and in the following 3 days of fighting, it's estimated that around 12,000 could have been killed in the capital and countryside. Some fighting even continued after the official ceasefire to end the war in Europe. Among those attending Friday's memorial event were the heads of both Czech Houses of Parliament, Milan Stěch and Jan Hamáček, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka and Mayor of Prague Adriana Krnáčová. There were also a handful of participants from those events from over 70 years ago. Leader of the upper house, the Senate, Milan Stěch, said the rising was not a meaningless act at the end of the war, as was sometimes portrayed. It's estimated that it helped accelerate the war's end in Europe by around 2 weeks and encouraged the Nazis to quit Prague before it was turned into ruins.
Jenže Němci právě počítali s tím, že hlavní opevnění bude.
The Germans were counting on the fact that their main defences would have been on the left bank of the Vltava.
That would have meant the whole of Malá Strana and Prague Castle during the fighting would have ended in ruins. Charles Bridge, the Teen Church, the Powder Tower, and Old Town Hall, everything would have been in ashes as the Germans retreated. That was what they were counting on. There were around 1 million German soldiers in the whole Bohemian sector. It is necessary to see the all-round picture. The Prague uprising was far from a pointless act. Not only did it have a tactical, strategic, military, and political significance, but it also helped to unify the nation.
Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka recalled that 90 people alone died on May the 5th at the radio headquarters. Commemorating the sacrifices of the past also committed today's citizens to recognise and fight evil and defend freedom and democracy, he said.
Chris Johnstone with that report. In other news, Foreign Minister Lubomir Zaoralek has outlined the Czech Republic's priorities for its upcoming chairmanship of the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe, highlighting, above all, protection of human rights. Speaking at a conference at the Černín Palace on Thursday, the minister also presented the Czech Republic's logo for chairmanship, which is to last from May until November 2017. Ruth Rankova has the details.
For the second time in its history, the Czech Republic is set to assume the chairmanship of the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe, presenting the country's priorities for the presidency. Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek said the Czech Republic would focus on the most topical issues, above all the need to protect the human rights of persons belonging to vulnerable or disadvantaged groups.
A to téma je dnes strašně aktuální.
It is a very hot issue today. The Council of Europe has been dealing with the referendum in Turkey and overseeing observance of human rights in Ukraine, but it also deals with some complicated cases, such as in Great Britain. I recently discussed with Mr. Jagland the case of the Czech national murdered in London. The European Court for Human Rights is, in fact, the only institution we can appeal to if we don't agree with the verdict of the British court.
Tak můžete nakonec vznést jedině právě u toho Evropského soudu pro lidská práva.
Mr. Zaorálek referred there to the verdict of a British court which set free a British man accused of a killing of a Czech national in London. He noted that if a country fails to respect the verdict of the European Court for Human Rights, its membership in the Council of Europe should be questioned. Among other priorities he mentioned is the strengthening of the rule of law, which he said was highly topical not only in Europe but the world over.
We also want to support democracy on both regional and local levels. One of the topics is promoting human rights education and linguistic skills, which may not seem that important, but is in fact essential for carrying out our objectives. It is also essential for us to boost cooperation with other international organizations.
On the occasion of the Czech chairmanship, the Czech Republic has prepared a series of cultural events to take place in Strasbourg, the seat of the Council of Europe, including a number of exhibitions and concerts. The logo of the upcoming Czech presidency of the Council of Europe, three intersecting blue and red circles, was designed by a young student of Tomáš Baťa University in Zlín and symbolizes cooperation between individual member states.
And that was Ruth Frankova. And that takes us to today's main feature. German artist Gerhard Richter has been described as one of the greatest living painters, a man who left a mark both on the 20th century and continues to push boundaries with his work even today. Without exaggeration, a retrospective of Mr. Richter's work, which opened recently at the National Gallery, is the cultural event of the season, and a chance for Czech audiences to see early work such as Oswald from 1964, the controversial Uncle Rudy, 1965, to the artist's abstract works. The exhibition shows how Gerhard Richter, who is now 85, fits within the broader painting tradition. He himself, for example, cites the Dutch masters as an early inspiration, but also shows his forays into pop art and other approaches. Above all, arguably, it highlights a natural ease with which the artist has shifted throughout his career from entirely abstract works, such as Grey or 2000, to the show's signature image in Prague, a 1977 portrait of his daughter Betty. At the opening, the artist made clear he was happy the retrospective was being held in the Czech capital at the National Gallery's Kinsky Palace, along with several works at the Agnes Monastery, which he said was more suitable for his work than the gallery's functionalist trade fair palace, which which might be surprising for some. The artist at the opening on April 26th.
The cooperation was great. The head of the National Gallery, Yiri Feit, suggested the rooms in the former Trade Palace first, but this was architecturally not so suitable for the formats. I said, this is not that, I want something different. And then we came to the beautiful Kinski Palace.
In any case, it's hard to argue that the stately Kinski Palace isn't a perfect fit. Here is how the head of the National Gallery in Prague, Jiří Feit, described the exhibition on the day of its opening.
For me, this exhibition is a pure celebration of painting. Gerhard himself says that may sound a little old-fashioned at a time when conceptual art is fairly dominant, where we often need an instructional manual to understand what is going on. Here we are in the field of painting, but of course that doesn't mean it isn't without ideas. Even if the painter himself sometimes denies it, the works have a deep meaning and humanistic mission. That is what makes the works exceptional.
Feit went on to describe some of the elements or some of the aims which are characteristic of the German artist's work.
For Richter, a basic need to explore the possibilities or boundaries of painting as such is essential, from photorealism to abstract works in the strictest sense. Some of the abstract paintings, as you will see, were based on industrial colour sample swatches, yet he was able to turn them into fascinating work.
And the retrospective features more than 50 works by the artist who emigrated to West Germany and first settled in Düsseldorf in the 1960s, which was an artistic epicenter at the time. Later, he would relocate to Cologne. Some of his iconic early images referred directly to World War II, American or German fighter planes, the aforementioned Uncle Rudy, who was a member of the SS, a painting that the artist donated to the museum at Ligice in Czechoslovakia in the 1960s, before he was well known as today. And Ligice was infamously razed to the ground during the Second World War, its men executed and women and children sent to concentration camps. This as reprisal for the assassination by Czechoslovak paratroopers of the Reichsprotector Reinhard Heydrich. Jiří Feit told Radio Prague more about that early work.
On the one hand, he has an intense need to reflect on the past, and for a German that includes the tragedies of the 20th century and the world wars. He is obsessed with duty to address the past, and he was one of the first in what was a very strong generation of artists, including Baselitz and many others. So the horrors of war, victimhood are addressed as well as the family past. In his own family, his uncle was a member of the SS, yet he had an aunt who was mentally ill, who was kept at a hospital where Dr. Haider conducted horrific experiments on patients, and she died there. So even in this family past, you have both active membership in the SS and a tragic death due to the Nazi regime.
The hazy, out-of-focus quality in many of Richter's photorealist works, the famous blur, add a translucent element that both reinforces the illusion of the work as a photograph and undercut it at the same time. There is a mix of the everlasting and the ephemeral, a reality which can be grasped and yet which remains beyond reach, like a shimmering image at the bottom of a well. In the case of the painting of Uncle Rudy, his smile belies the horrors of the regime he willingly served. So the viewer can take things at face value, but there are deeper and deeper layers if you get below the surface. Moving into the abstract, there is a similar interplay. The surface of a painting may be uniformly gray, but the brushstrokes left and right, dried in place, paradoxically accentuate a continual, never-ending dynamic of movement and energy. And if you jump ahead to Gerhard Richter's strips from only a few years ago, his mirrors or his latest murky abstracts, it at times gives the feeling the viewer is seeing a show by a series of different artists, not one person. And the National Gallery's Yiri Feit addressed that fact right here.
Kdybychom pracovali tou stylovou analýzou, což je jedna ze základních...
If we approach his work through stylistic analysis, one of the basic approaches in the study of art history, not knowing all of this different work was done by one person, you would be completely thrown for a loop. His answer is beautiful. We do live in a period when absolutely everything is relativized. There is confusion. I also am confused, so I'm not sure. But the fact that I don't know makes me want to express myself in some way. Figurative painting and abstraction, it doesn't matter. Both are the same, and this is a thread which continues throughout his work right up to the present.
The Gerhard Richter retrospective continues at the National Gallery until September the 3rd. Guided tours are offered in Czech and English, and the catalogue, which is very well produced, is also available in different languages. You can look up the information you need at ngprague.cz. Okay, and that's just about all we have time for today. But if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard, if you have any questions for us, anything of note, please write to english@radio.cz. Also, you can look us up on Facebook and on Twitter. And that's about it. I'm Jan Wellinger. Thank you so much for joining us today. And join us again soon. Bye.